It's so fucking done. We just recorded for like 3 minutes and Logic disarmed my channels again. And so here we are again.
No punny jokes.
Welcome back to welcome back to week 17, take two.
Take two. It's all right. Fuck. 3 minutes is better than 30 minutes.
That's true.
Which is better than 3 hours.
That's true.
And if we're talking about these movies for 3 hours, we need to probably check ourselves in somewhere, because I don't think any of these movies warrant.
I'm not even following what you're saying right now.
Discussion. I don't know.
Oh, hello.
Man, the mood changed from 3 minutes loss of recording.
We were enthusiastic in take one, but take two, we just fell into how we really feel. This is the real us.
Yeah. Welcome to New Day, New Movie.
Yes, New Day, New Movie. The NDNM podcast.
Where we watch 365 movies.
In 365 fucking days.
And I'm Mitch.
I'm Scott.
And are we recording this time?
Yeah, we're recording.
Woo!
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Week 17. Let's go.
Let's do it. Man, like Scott's morale has dropped drastically.
I put all my energy today into building up for when I hit the record button, and I hit it and it
and it didn't record
and let it all out, and I got nothing left.
How you doing?
Goose Rob. Oh man, how are you doing? You can tell how I'm doing. How are you doing?
I think this felt like the longest week of my life. I don't know why that is.
I don't even think it's the movies anymore.
It just seems like forever that I recorded. I watched the movies. Everything was fine. I did all the things. Not as much coaching this week because I'm in between seasons, and yet I'm still just kind of like, it seems like a month since I've seen you and been in front of the mic. Just a busy week, I guess. I just felt a lot of things happened, even though they kind of didn't.
Yeah, I feel the same way. But I don't think it's the movies. Like, I didn't have an... So I think it was the first week that I didn't watch part of a movie not on the day that we were supposed to. And I didn't have a problem with watching the movies. And I don't think there's... Even including our first movie, which we've already said in our previous take that we don't fucking remember. I don't think there's a movie that I didn't enjoy watching this week. And I know that you feel slightly differently.
Yeah, I think there's just the one on my list, but that's fine. Yeah.
But that being said, like, I don't understand why this week was just so tough.
And draining and long.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say draining.
It's the monotony of, like, the routine that we have now created for ourselves. We can do it, but it's just, it doesn't feel fulfilling anymore. Every day it's just, all right, let's get through today.
I don't know. I had a really good week, though. I think it just felt long. And I'm like looking back at like our first two movies, you know, Monday and Tuesday, and it just seems years ago I watched these movies.
We saw each other at the theater on Tuesday.
On Tuesday. And yet it just seems eons ago, almost like forever ago. Jackass forever ago. God. Help us.
Yeah.
So, movies of the week. On Monday, we watched The Take. On Tuesday, we watched Jackass Forever. Wednesday, We Need to Talk About Kevin. Thursday, High Rise. Friday, we had a good time watching Good Time. Saturday, War Dogs. And Sunday, Colossal. What a list.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Heaven let your light shine down. All right, we need a little pick-me-up.
Okay.
I just feel like this movie had...
Do you want to talk about the movie yet, or you want to do
like,
the...
No, I feel like this week had... I'm pulling a U at the time. We had 12 movies this week. 12 movies of movie this week.
Yeah, 2 hours and 42 movies.
No, I just felt like this week had some unexpected... heavier movies that I wasn't
expecting
prepared for. Yeah, that I didn't anticipate them being like that. So when I kind of sat down and thought, here we go, like, chillax and watch a movie, it wasn't that.
Yeah, I think the only movie that, like, lived up to the expectation that I had for it was Jackass Forever.
Oh, okay. I was going to say War Dogs.
Oh, yeah, I guess that kind of too. But I know what to expect from Jackass, and I got my expectation from Jackass. Sure. However, not knowing any expectations on things, The Take, Scott was like, here's another heist movie. And I'm like, oh, great.
I was like, do you want to watch another fucking heist movie?
So here we are, The Take. Michael Mason, a pickpocket living in Paris, steals a bag with a teddy bear in it. Not realizing the toy contains a timed bomb, he tosses it aside on a busy street. A few seconds later, it explodes, killing four people. CCTV footage reveals Mason's face, and the French police tag him as a terrorist threat. The explosion, although botched, was set up by a select group of French Interior Ministry as decoy so they can make a $500 million digital transfer from a bank, closed on French National Day. In a separate CIA investigation, the unruly agent Sean Breyer discovers the real story behind Mason's terrorist attack. The two men on different sides of the law collaborate to bring the corrupt members of the ministry down. I like how they just give you this, you know, like give you the whole.
There's the movie.
Whole reveal in the so, in the plot.
If you want to see that in movie pictures, then go for it. Otherwise, you've got it. You've got the story.
So
and you can guess where it goes.
As Scott kind of was like, hey, you want to watch kind of another heist movie? And I was a little hesitant about it, but we watched it. However, I think this was my favorite of the heist movies we've watched because it didn't revolve around the heist at all. Yeah. It was just a little plot point.
It wasn't really a heist movie. It was just there was a heist happening and they had to stop it instead of they had to heist shit.
With that being said, though, this is such a hard movie for me to remember.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really trying to think back to what even happened. Like, it was pretty forgettable to me.
Yeah.
Because nothing really stood out about the movie. I mean, it was decent, right? But, like, it wasn't good. It wasn't bad. It was
pretty generic.
It just was, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. When I went back, because I didn't take notes for this one, when I went back to review and take notes, I still don't remember everything that happened in the second half of this movie. But I think I remembered enough to remember how I felt about it. I know I've said that a lot in the last couple of weeks. I think Monday movies are just really
hard to remember after
getting to me. Yeah.
Six other movies that you've watched.
They're hard to stick around.
So I think for me, like Idris Elba and Richard Madden, I mean, they had a pretty interesting dynamic in the movie.
Yeah.
But they didn't play off it enough for it to like really sell it.
Yeah.
And I think back to, you know, movies that we watch, like the detective has to, you know, pair up with the bad guy. Like, you know, this is no 48 Hours, right?
Yeah.
But it's one of those
types
of stories.
Yeah, I didn't even think to compare it to that, but you're right. That is kind of in that realm.
Where it's like, and it's we got the CIA agents, you know, teaming up with the con artists to bring down a group of inside men in the police force.
Yeah, uncover the conspiracy that's going on. I think what didn't help, I mean, I don't know that this would be a movie. I saw it a while back, and like I've said many times, I like Idris Elba. I figured it wasn't going to be the worst thing we've watched. But I mean, like you said, it's just nothing memorable. But I'm not saying Richard Madden is a bad actor, but he's just kind of bland. He's in a kind of class of actors that I think are just, like, they're okay. They do good in, like, he was a good Rob Stark because Rob Stark was a bland kind of by the book, you know? Like, he was meant to be that character. He was meant to be that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get the whole pickpocket, like, I didn't get that from him. And I thought that with Eternals, too. That's the only other thing I can think of recently that we saw.
I haven't seen him in a lot, yeah.
Yeah, he's just kind of there.
A presence.
He's the like, milquetoast stoic. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
Is that too bad? He's like a cardboard wall.
Cardboard cutout of himself
yes,
in a movie?
Yeah, kind of. And I'd like to see him in more because I don't know, you know, I mean, there's plenty there's plenty of people that are that I've thought in the past that were kind of like that, that didn't stand out to me in a role or something, but then I've seen him in other stuff. But if I think back to the roles I have seen him in, he's always kind of like that. And like I said, with Game of Thrones, that was the point, so it didn't go noticed.
Well, so do you get that association just because of his presence on the show? Like, kind of like Daniel Radcliffe is kind of always going to be Harry Potter to me, regardless of...
No.
Like, outside of that realm. I know he breaks out as an actor, right, and he's trying to do other things, and it's, you know, he's trying to separate himself from being that character, but it's like, in the back of your mind, you're like, that's Harry Potter, bro. That's Robb Stark, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that I'd like to say that I do a decent job. Maybe I don't subconsciously, but I think I do pretty well. Cause I mean, I like Daniel Radcliffe in a lot of stuff I've seen him in recently.
No, and like I said, I think some actors and actresses do well to kind of break out of that association that a lot of people have with them, and not seeing, you know, Richard Madden in a lot of things. I didn't know if that was something that just lingered in the back of your head of just like, that was the character of Robb Stark. Sure. You felt he did good there. So anytime he's not there, maybe.
Sure, potentially. I just didn't get the character that he was meant to play in this.
It was kind of odd.
Yeah, it didn't fit him. Like, and I think that's another thing with Eternals, at least. I think that role fit him better, or that character fit him a little better, because that character was kind of meant to be...
He was more of a leadership position on the Eternals, even if he...
Or it fit him playing it that way. But like, this didn't... And so, yeah, maybe like you said, subconsciously, that's the only two things I have to compare him to. Yeah. But I don't know. I recently started sprinkling in when I can. A few weeks ago, I was watching that M. Night Shyamalan show on Apple TV, The Servant.
Yep.
And I thought that was going to be weird with Rupert Grint.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the first time I saw him, I was like... Oh, that's weird. Weird seeing him with a, you know, American accent and the character that he's playing. But he, you know, I don't know, in my head transformed, and I don't feel like I held him to that standard or something where I thought, it's just Ron. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know. That is something interesting. And I'm not against, like, I don't dislike Richard Madden. I don't think this worked for him, for me, I guess. So, I mean, I'm still more than happy to watch him in other stuff.
Well, I think that's why casting for a character is so important and crucial to a movie. And it's kind of like goes along with that whole like Nick Cage theory of making sure you have the right person to fill the spot of that role, you know, that we discussed a few weeks ago.
Sure.
But yeah, this was, I'm still just trying to remember what even like happened.
I
remember they stuck like a flash drive into the bank and just pulled out like $500 million.
What they did? I don't remember that.
Richard Madden had to like bump into the guy to steal the flash drive.
I just remember
that was part of his con artisty like pickpocketing.
Oh yeah, he pickpocketed him in the crowd.
Yeah,
and then the bad guy fired the gun in the air. Everybody got down, and then he stood up dramatically. And then everybody like, lit up the bad guy, all the cops around him, because he had the gun.
Well, yeah, because he had all the information as to who was behind everything.
I mean, it was meh. Yeah, it was what it was. It's pretty much what you'd expect, right? I don't think anything in it really shocked me, other than the fact that
it wasn't a heist movie.
They didn't go through it wasn't a heist movie. And I know you don't read the synopses. But no. I kind of knew that it wasn't going to be like just a straight up heist movie, but it's like The Take, right? And they say heist in the...
Well, I think if I had read this
short preview,
I mean, it straight up tells you who's the bad guys. There's no reveal.
If you read the one that you read, then yes, the whole movie's ruined anyway.
Yeah, it's just done, you know? So maybe it was a good thing I didn't read that. But a movie, as I said, that I definitely had the expectation going in, and it lived up to the expectation. Jackass Forever.
Yes. Tuesday, Jackass Forever. After 10 years, the Jackass crew is back for their final crusade. That is the only synopsis you need.
Yes. And if you've never seen Jackass, I don't know if I should even be a one to recommend it. It's just... bunch of guys going out and doing stupid shit for our amusement, and thank you, all of them. We saw this in Dolby. I didn't think we would ever see Jackass in Dolby. I never thought I would see Steve-O's dick in Dolby. That's, or his asshole.
Thing, like. The first thing you said when we got to the theater and we were walking in is you thought, Dolby, man, the blacks of their assholes are going to be so dark. And sure enough,
they were.
Yes, the projector was still on.
Yeah, that's something fun with Dolby at the very beginning. If you've ever seen one of their films, yeah. They're like, in the theater, this was black. And then it goes to show you how much more like lumens the projector has to really project the darkness of, you know, what is on screen and whatnot.
Yeah, the picture turns off and it's just a black screen, but it's still being projected to, right? The project. So it literally pulls up the project. Yes, the projector's still on. Like, it's so black, you can't even tell the projector's on. It's not, but you know, it's cute.
So let me just start off by saying the production level on this movie was massive.
Like, yeah.
They've definitely kind of exponentially scaled the production, but this thing had whole, like, some of the stuff they were doing was insane.
Can I say real quick my quick little thing, because I think it leads into that.
Yes, please.
Is I honestly wasn't the most excited to see this because the last one, I was fucking 17.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, I don't know. I had it in the back of my head, I guess. I was apprehensive because I thought, my humor isn't necessarily the same, right? Maybe I don't. Maybe I don't really laugh at people getting hit in the nuts anymore. It just hurts. I don't really, you know what I mean?
This like, one hurt a lot.
Yes, it did. I think that was one of the main differences between then and now. But the only difference was just, I think we felt the pain a little more, but we still were laughing like little fucking girls the whole movie.
This was by.
I really.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I really never thought in a million years that we would have watched them at around 50 years old, and they would try to top their younger selves. But God damn it, they fucking did it.
Yeah, they did.
And it was fantastic.
This is my favorite Jackass movie out Absolutely. Of the four. Or I guess seven if you want to count like Jackass 1.5, 2.5, and 3.5, yeah. Where they show some of the stuff that didn't make the cut of the actual film. Aaron McGahey was the star of this movie. That dude got his shit
that
rocked.
Poor guy.
I mean, just the entire cup strength bit that they did for this film, where he got punched by a heavyweight UFC
hardest,
fighter.
On record, hardest hitter in heavyweight UFC.
And then he got followed up by a softball pitch to nuts, a slap shot in hockey, and then to cap it all off, the pogo stick.
Oh, the pogo stick was so bad.
Oh, my God.
See, I don't
God.
Know how much I wanted. Like, this is going to be a hard one to talk about because it'll just be us reminiscing about all the different skits and stuff they did. But yes, if you are a male, for sure, I can't speak for females. I'm not one, so I'm not sure how it affects you guys. But if you're a male, this one hurts.
Yeah, it hurt a lot.
I think I was sitting in like the fetal position in my chair in the theater for a while, laughing tears of joy
but
at the hilarity, but like, also cringing at the pain that
kind of fetal positioned up, yeah. Clenching everything.
You're guarding your balls the whole movie.
Because you don't want your friend next to you to nut punch yeah, you in the middle
kind of
the movie.
Used to do. Just like sack tap in the middle of the movie.
But that's shit. That's shit that these guys still do.
Yeah,
into their
yeah.
50s.
Just yeah, they haven't grown up at all.
Speaking of that, though, I mean, even in kind of the very one sentence synopsis that you read, right? You know, it's their final crusade. They kind of put everything on the line for this. And, you know, it was kind of, I'm glad to see the end of an era because I really don't know how much more of this type of stuff these
guys
could take.
I hope they don't try and come back, yeah.
But it also seemed like the passing of the torch, right? Because they had they introduced a lot of new members, which I thought they did a pretty good job.
I liked quite a few of them.
You know, jumping in and they felt like they weren't just there. They felt part of the group and they felt like, they were just one of the Jackass guys.
Yeah, at least in the final cut of the movie, they did a good job of making it seem like they're now just one of the guys.
So
even the girl.
Yeah. Dude, she has a huge pain tolerance. Like, oh my
gosh.
Yeah,
holy shit. She didn't, she like barely flinched when they put the scorpion stung her lips and her chin.
I was thinking of the third or fourth one. The lick a fucking taser gun.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
When she was a mime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She didn't make a noise, which was hilarious because that was the contest was they couldn't make a sound. And Steve-O was like, I'm ready. I'm going to win. He's being all cocky, but like miming it. And then he screams immediately.
What happened?
And was
to him?
Like, I forgot I was supposed to be quiet. They dropped a skateboard on his shins. Oh, yeah. The skateboard guillotine
Dude,
on his
I'm
shins.
Just thinking of it just makes me just good on them. Yeah. I mean, really good on them. It was a really good culmination to the 20 years of just shit they've put up through.
Yep.
And suffered through. Johnny Knoxville got his shit rocked in this one.
Oh man, the bull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been hit by a lot of bulls.
Like, how many times in this movie they're like, between him and Steve-O, we're like, I just kind of blacked out. I don't remember what happened after that point. Like, fuck.
The fucking line afterwards, Jesus, where he's like, fuck, that bull didn't like magic or whatever. So funny.
Yeah, they had that fucking wheel him out on a stretcher.
I mean, yeah, if you're a fan of Jackass, you've probably seen the movie. If you're not a fan of Jackass, I
highly recommend.
Sure.
Just kidding.
I put this up there in like that whole Wes Anderson thing of like,
if it's your thing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's not everyone's thing.
As someone too that I didn't think that I was going to enjoy it nearly as much as I did anymore, right? Yeah. I really did. And I think if you ever did enjoy it and you're thinking the same way with this one where you're like, I don't know if it's, you know, going to be funny anymore.
It is.
I'm not interested. It really is. I would say give it a shot because, I don't know, you just feel like it's that weird phenomenon with YouTubers and Twitch streamers and stuff that goes on now where they do such a good job of like everybody just feels like you're their friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
The communities that they build, where even though it's not really like that, that's how this kind of was. Like when you're watching this movie, you just kind of feel like you're there and you're watching this group. The camaraderie in the group is just astounding.
Yeah, you're just one of the guys watching other, you know, guys just get their shit rocked. And then
and
you're
glad
just hoping
that you're on
not
the other
next,
side of the screen. Yeah. You're glad that you're not going to get a coffee and getting a blow up.
Fucking inflatable.
Inflatable fist blow up at you and knock you over. Which was the tamest of all of the skits, I think.
By far.
I don't know why I'm remembering that one.
Probably because they melted in the advertising to the movie.
That's true. Well, I just like that that's where they got Eric Andre.
Yeah.
Because he didn't do anything else in the movie, did he? I don't know why he was even there. I wonder if none of his stuff made it or if he just...
Who was the guy
maybe
who
Eric
was
Andre's
playing the
a little
piano?
Bitch and he pussed out. Oh, Tyler the Creator.
Tyler the Creator. That shit was funny.
That was hilarious. Especially when they put
the director.
What's his name? I can't think of his name.
Jeff Tremaine.
Yeah, Jeff. As soon as they put Jeff on the shock piano bench.
And he fucking
and he realizes
up.
how bad that actually hurts. That was hilarious. Oh, man. Well, if you like people getting covered in 5 gallons of pig cum.
Oh, I wasn't going to go there.
Or bees on Steve-O's dick.
Dude, yeah.
Or I think there's more dick in this one than there was in any of the other ones. From
more
what
dick,
I remember.
Less shit.
Yes, which is...
Much better.
I think I prefer it that way, yeah. As weird as that is to say. I think I prefer more dick and less shit. This is where this movie puts you, in this mindset. It's just... Nothing could do that to me these days anymore, and this did it. So I'm inclined to say, you know what? Everybody needs a little dumb teenager levity in their lives. It's doing stupid shit.
But changing the pace quite a bit.
Yeah.
We need to talk about Kevin. So Eva's a mother trying to piece together her life following an incident caused by her odd child, Kevin. Once a successful writer, she's forced to take whatever comes her way, in spite of the increasingly bizarre and dangerous things Kevin says or does.
I was not ready for this. This is the one I was talking about in the beginning that I was not ready for.
No, I had an inclination as to what this would be. I
knew it wasn't going to be fun, but no. I didn't know how not fun it was going to be.
Yeah, this
is heavy.
This movie was something. Made me super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Not to say that it was a bad movie, though. This was a really good movie. No,
it was a fantastic movie.
And it's a movie I will never watch again. This falls into one of the great movies I've seen that just does not need a rewatching. I've seen everything I need to see, and I just don't need to do it ever again. I know what happens, and it's scarred me a little bit. And, you know, I think it will lead to some interesting discussion today. So I think as a teacher, this movie just hit a little different with the whole...
I would imagine.
I mean, it's kind of plays off of the... Kevin ends up kind of doing a school shooting, but with like archery equipment, because that's what he got as a Christmas present a long time ago. And
that was kind of his thing.
His thing was he was an archer, and he just locked all the doors, and just it was kind of disturbing to watch. And in the back of my mind, you know, as a teacher, that was kind of, you know, that's a scary reality of, you know, kind of the world we live in. But at the same time, too, I almost think this would be even more painful to watch as a parent than a teacher. Because there was points in this movie where, you know, I've always wanted to be a dad, but this movie made me question that a little bit. Not to say that I don't want to be a dad, you know, because of this movie.
Right.
Because I still do. It was just, holy fuck, like that kid was deranged. And this is just a fucking messed up movie.
Yeah. Well, and it really does raise the question of, and I don't even know if I have a side to pick on what I'm about to say, I guess, but like the parents of the children that do this, right? And the hand that they, the role that they play in that. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a fine line between deciding who is at fault and could something else have been done, and, you know?
So I would just say, like, this movie kind of, at its core purpose, boils down to nature versus nurture. Are people born inherently bad, or are they raised to be bad people? And in the few glimpses of things that we see for flashbacks leading up to, you know, kind of the end of the film, where Tilda Swinton is talking with her son in the movie, Ezra Miller, and you just kind of get glimpses back to kind of her point of view as to maybe did she lead him wrong?
What went
wrong throughout his childhood to lead him
her guilt.
Yes. And I think even looking at some of those past experiences, like obviously she didn't handle the situations the best, but at the same time, was she trying her best to be a good mom with what she was dealt? Like it's kind of makes you question whether, you know, did she lead to that?
How much was her influence, doing? How much was her fault? And that's what, and I think that's what makes it so heavy is not even what happens, right? Not even the shooting, but just the idea of her life after that, because he doesn't just shoot up the school. He kills
his dad and
the younger sister. And so she's the only one left. And it's just, it's this like weird look at her grief and her taking responsibility, even though whether or not she deserved it, or, you know what I mean? And the way that people treat her because of the situation.
Yeah, the aftermath is they blame her.
Which is the whole psychology of her taking responsibility, you know, maybe beyond even what she needed to, or I don't know. It's a really deep, strange concept to think about, right? The psychology behind not the person. I liked the angle that it took, mm-hmm. right? Not the person who did the act, but someone close, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't see that a lot in movies where, you know, usually the something bad happens or whatever. It's the perspective of
the person who's bad.
Right. Because it's like by the time it shows you, it's like a slow reveal and you can totally see where it's going. It's not surprising, really.
Yeah, that's what I wrote, is that I wasn't surprised by the
ending.
It's
not like a twist.
But I was left speechless.
Sure.
After all.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it's not. I think I liked it wasn't, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. It wasn't a slow reveal to reveal what happened. It was the slow reveal, how I kind of took it, which is what I really enjoyed about the movie, is it's like the slow reveal of her facing reality, of her remembering the events, because you just get little pieces at a time when she has breakdowns or, you know,
yep.
And it's just like, you just, you keep getting a little bit more each time. And it's almost like her slowly facing and remembering what happened with, well, that whole kind of acceptance process, right?
It's also what they're showing, though, is where she might have felt that maybe she slipped up as a mother. Like the events, yeah, that might have impacted
that too,
how he got there, right? Which could be interpreted multiple ways.
Which, that's what I'm saying, is the whole reveal is like her almost processing it kind of linearly,
mm-hmm,
through his life,
yep,
and her life, of how we got there, right? Yeah. How we got here, kind of thing. And I just thought, as far as storytelling goes,
oh, it was like a great story.
Yeah.
And I think the ending does such a good job with this film, because at the very end, like, she's sitting there, she's talking to her son in prison. And I think that pushes you to believe that this was a nature, not a nurture, right? Where, because she's still there, she loves her son, well, even after everything that he's done.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe there was times where she didn't necessarily. But at the same time, Ezra Miller's character finally has an empathetic and, like,
yeah,
realistic, like, feeling of, like, oh, shit.
That, like, fucking quote, dude, where she asks him, she's just like, I just want to ask you why. Yeah. Finally, after however many years it's been. And I just want to ask you why. And he just says, I used to think that I knew. And it's just like this. It's a really weird. I feel like a lot of people may not like this take on things, because it's not black and white, right? It introduces a lot of gray to the psychology behind all, you know, an event like this happening, where the child doing it, you know, I mean, as a kid, there's so many factors that, I don't know, see, it's hard to talk about. There's just so many factors that can allow for something like that to happen.
Yep.
And
it's not one thing or the other.
The fault of any one
person,
cog in the wheel, kind of thing, right?
It's kind of a chain reaction of events that, sure, led to it being to where it was.
Sure.
And I watched this with Kristen, and I mean, her overall thoughts were just kind of, very tough movie to watch. I think she's at the point of, like, she would never watch it again after seeing it. It raised a lot of questions for her, you know, kind of like it has for us, of just, you know, what was the motivation behind things? What led to everything getting as drastic as it did? You know, what is the interpretation from the end that you're supposed to understand? You know, is it he was just an inherently bad kid, or was there events that led to it? Is it a combination of both? Which I think it probably was, you know, it wasn't just one thing or one take. It was,
right,
like you said, it's all that gray area that everything falls in between. And yeah, it was a really good movie, but
yeah,
it's just, and even thinking back now, it's just like, it's kind of uncomfortable to just even think about.
Just the fact that we came onto this just today talking about this, not even, you know, when we watched them from one day to the next, but the fact of, like, how our mood has changed talking about this coming off of Jackass.
Yeah.
Like, is just kind of a testament to the power that this movie has to just make you depressed and
question so much.
Like, yeah. But it really was a great movie.
Yeah, like you said, I think it boiled down to really good storytelling, the slow reveals of information that leads up to the bigger picture, and then just the acting. I mean, even,
yeah,
the, I mean, the child Swinton actor was terrifying,
yeah, that's
little
true
kid, and you could just, oh, he, yeah, it was something.
Well, if you like tough movies or want a movie that's going to make you sit and ponder in silence for a while, every so often, maybe over the course of the next few days after you watch it, then highly recommend We Need to Talk About Kevin. So, Thursday. I am interested to start talking about this one, because you had told me that you did not like it. So Thursday was High Rise. Class struggle becomes all too real as a young doctor moves into a modern apartment block in suburban 1975 London. Drugs, drink, and debauchery dissolve into murder, mayhem, and misogyny in this pseudo-post-apocalyptic breakdown of societal norms. So, a hell of a cast. Tom Hiddleston as the lead, I thought was fantastic. And I enjoyed watching this, and I have more to say about this, but I would like to hear what you have to say, Mitch.
I think when I first read the synopsis for this movie, I got Snowpiercer vibes.
Sure.
Because they are similar to a point.
Same concept they're discussing. Sure. Yes.
But I don't think this was nearly as good as Snowpiercer was. Okay. I really thought the only thing I liked about this movie was cinematography at points.
Yeah.
And Luke Evans as Wilder.
Yeah.
Like that dude stole every fucking scene he was in. He was great. So good. But besides that, I just thought the plot was messy. There was really no story. Just poorly written characters outside of Wilder. And it was just, it felt like a jumbled mess to me. Like they were, either they didn't do a good job, you know, getting their message across, or they just had too many messages trying to get across. And I don't know which one it was.
I don't entirely disagree with you. I enjoyed watching this, but there was stuff that I... This movie gets weird.
Yes, very
weird. And insane. And so you... And stuff happens so fast that I just feel like there's so much that you don't catch, or that they don't... They couldn't fit into and actually portray.
Flesh out.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I bought this book.
Okay, yeah.
This is a book by J.G. Ballard, and it's a well-known book. I didn't know of it before this. We're uncultured swine, and we don't
we watch movies.
We don't know books, I guess, but I'm about to change that. On the shelf behind me, I have a stack of them.
I do see the High Rise.
High Rise. There it is. You see it. I literally already Amazon 2-day. I got it 2 days after we watched the movie. Because I just like character, like you said, right? Certain characters and dynamics, I just wanted a little more of. And I liked this, but I do feel like it fell short of what I think they were going for. And so that's why I thought, I want to see what the book has to say.
And how because it compares.
I like the idea of the story, and I like the craziness and the, you know, I get the message, whatever, but I want to see what the book. How the book frames things, and if it explains more, or you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, and
if
I think,
fleshes out more.
And I'm
in
glad
the book.
You have the same kind of agreement with me on things, and maybe you just enjoyed it more because it was so chaotic and crazy. And I mean, it was just, it fucking took a turn. I don't know at what point in the film, and it just went batshit crazy.
Yeah.
It went wild.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. It just, it felt. Like there was just too much going on for me to really just grasp at any, like, I think maybe it's because I latched onto Wilder as a character that I was able to follow his story and what was going on. But there's also like 10 other characters that had their own stories going on, but it was so back and forth and, you know, this is going on. And then and I was like,
yeah,
holy cow, like, slow the fuck down.
The second I found out it was a book, I thought, I want to see how the book portrays these characters, because I get what they're doing and what they're going for, but it just didn't. I just kind of wanted more.
Yeah.
Like I was very interested, but it never got to, I don't know. I think they focused more on the devolving into
madness
than sticking with, and I don't know. I don't know. But the book's only 200 pages, I'm not sure how much more, you know, I'm interested to see. And I think, I can't say I didn't like the movie, even just in the sense that it made me interested in the story and the book. And I'm going, as soon as I'm finally fucking done with Dune, because I'm not what I used to be and I just can't read all the time. And it's 700 freaking pages. So I think a 200 page book will be a nice, I could probably read it in a day if I wanted to. But like, I think Tom Hiddleston's character, the most out of all of them, I wanted just his mental state to know throughout the whole thing and how it changed. And it's just like we both said, stuff happened so fast. There were times where I wasn't sure what was going on and what pertained to.
Well, that's the
which
thing.
I think maybe was the point, but
I didn't even see the progression though for some of these characters. It was like night and day. It was like at one point they're just normal, fine, whatever. And then literally in the next scene, there's no like progression to their madness. It's just a 180 degree switch.
I think.
And there was no concept of time in the movie, which might have led to, you know, if I knew like, oh, 3 months later or something, like that would make sense. But it just seemed like the next day, just the power was going out, food was running low. And then
that's
it was
how
just
quick. I think that was the point, was how fast things devolve without, right? This class system. And but I didn't hate the, I enjoyed the like, I this loony, I don't know what's going on kind of euphoric chaos kind of vibe from the movie. But I feel like what hurt it was how many characters they had and the perspectives that kept changing. I'm curious to see how the book handles it, because they start out from the perspective of Tom Hiddleston's character, right? And it seems like that's where you're getting all the information. He goes to a party, he's meeting new people, conversations he has with people. But then at some point in the movie, they drop that perspective
almost
entirely. And they just show, they're just showing all of these pieces
from
with no rhyme or reason from everyone's perspective. And I think that that is where it kind of fell apart, where it was hard to follow. Because if they kept everything, like all the scenes with him going back and hiding in his house and people coming to the door and him running into the guy who's, you know, in charge of the trash chute now or whatever, I forget the one who the news anchor's screwing his wife.
Yeah.
And like all of those were great because you're seeing them from the perspective of someone living through this instead of just, you're now a fly on the wall for this whole building instead of continuing the seeing the progression of things, which I think maybe is where I think would have helped for you. It sounds like where the time kind of fell apart.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, and that does make sense, and maybe that plays into the chaotic nature of it, right? Everything's grounded at first, you're seeing everything from a single lens, and then as soon as, you know, the movie wants you to feel the chaoticness, right? Now we're not grounded to a single character, we are just seeing the events take place in this skyscraper, right?
Yeah.
This entire...
Yeah, maybe it was intentional.
Social class living in, or multiple social classes living amongst each other in a high-rise building, and... I don't know. It wasn't my favorite. And I think
crazy movie.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the book, because if you feel the book plays with all of those elements better and is able to establish just motivations and the reasons things devolve through characters' perspectives, I would give it a read. It just...
Yeah.
After the movie, I was just like, this sucked. I'm like, what the fuck did I just watch?
I felt some of the similar confusions that it sounds like you had, but I took the different, I liked the movie. It just didn't quite get to where I wanted, where I don't know.
Had imagined it might be.
Yeah. I guess I saw the potential or the, maybe it's a good introduction to the book for me that I didn't, you know, I wasn't aware of. But it had a hell of a soundtrack. But but Friday.
Yeah, good time. Connie Nikas forcibly removes his developmentally disabled brother Nick from a therapy session. The two rob a New York City bank for $65,000. In the getaway car, a dye pack explodes in a money bag, causing the driver to crash. Connie and Nick flee on foot, washing the dye from their clothes in a restaurant restroom. Stopped by police, Nick panics and runs. Nick is arrested while Connie escapes. Connie attempts to secure a bail bond but needs $10,000 more to get Nick out of jail. He convinces his girlfriend Corey to pay with her mother's credit cards, but her mother cancels the cards. Connie learns that Nick has been hospitalized after a fight with an inmate.
That's a weird synopsis.
It really is. It just kind of explains the first, like, 30 minutes of the movie, but nothing else that kind of... So, I really like this movie. I'm not going to make my joke again because I already made it earlier.
I forget what it was. Do it for me.
I had a good time watching Good Time.
Did you?
I did.
I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I'd call it a good time.
No, I mean, that's a weird thing to say. It was kind of a very... It was a deep movie. I'm continually surprised at how versatile an actor Robert Pattinson is.
Robert Pattinson is awesome.
Like, I really enjoy him. And it sucks that, like, his career took off where it did.
But, dude, Twilight got him where it got him.
Yeah, as I say, he's doing fantastic.
He
got where
he needed to be. He's a talented motherfucker.
He really is. But, no, this movie had a really good story. The pacing was excellent. I thought they built suspense well. And the acting on top of everything was just incredible. But this is kind of just a adventure story almost, as Connie is racing to, you know, save his brother from being in prison. And he's kind of a con artisty person. Like, he has a really good way of talking to people and manipulating, you know, different types of people to do his bidding. And there's also
no problems lying.
And there's also, like, a little bit of luck on his side that, like, you know, gets him really far until it doesn't.
But at some point, at some point, something's got to give.
Yeah. Well, no, I really like this. What did you think?
I really like this as well. This type of movie, I'm trying to genre-lize. Does that make sense? Like, I'm trying to figure out what this is because I really like these. And I'm going to group this with something like Zola.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like slice of life kind of story, but it's not mundane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, slice of life kind of stuff is usually just the story of these events happening of this person. It's not really necessarily exciting like this or gritty. It's like a gritty slice of life. I don't know. I don't know how to categorize this, but I fucking love it. But this is like the more fucked up cousin of Zola. I think this was more, I don't know the word, gritty. Like,
and maybe that's because, like, this is a fabricated story versus Zola being based off of true events, right?
Yeah.
And not to say that this couldn't happen, right?
But the movie, I guess the movie Zola wasn't. It gave him the idea for the based on true events, but it was... exaggerated, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
Yes, it had the Hollywood spin on it.
Sure. But this was directed by Benny and Josh Safdie, which I don't know if you looked them up.
Mm-mm.
They're the guys, they're two brothers.
Two brothers.
Set you up for that one. They did Uncut Gems.
Okay, so I really like that movie.
I have not seen Uncut Gems. It is on my list, but I'm assuming that from what I heard from it from you and others is it has the same kind of intensity and snowballing.
Yeah, I think it does a good job to either, like you put it, snowball or the characters digging themselves a deeper grave, essentially. Like they continue to push the boundaries, push the limits to where eventually, like, it's all just kind of, you know,
you just kind of feel you can't keep this up forever kind of thing, right? You're waiting for it to fall apart.
And that was something I mentioned with this movie. It was kind of had sort of an anticlimactic ending compared to the rest of the film, but I think that's what worked well is that it wasn't a huge spectacle. Like, this was just a guy who used his charm and his luck to get as far as he did, but, you know, eventually it has to catch up with him, and eventually, you know, he's going to be just at the wrong place at the wrong time, and he's walking out of a hotel as cops come to find him and, you know, arrest him, and that's fine, you know, because everything that he has gotten away with up to this point, you're like, oh, come on. But eventually it's just like just the little thing that's like,
yeah,
you know, you just couldn't do it forever.
It worked too with the kind of thought of the movie revolves around him.
Yeah.
But the story and the life around him, this type of thing that's happening, isn't that grand scale, right? Life doesn't revolve around him. So the ending being that way, it also brought back in the kind of the thought of, you know, what was best for his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even despite him very obviously caring a lot about him, was he the best person to have around to take care of him?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely used him for his own kind of agenda.
Yeah.
At times, even if he, you know, if it was for the purpose of giving them both a better life, you know, why are you putting, you know, your brother in this situation in the first place to rob a bank? Just all of the events that led up to where it did. And, you know, the ending, the very end, where his brother is finally kind of getting the treatment that he needs. That was a powerful scene, I thought. Just everything kind of culminating together. The last point we see for Robert Pattinson's character is that he's being arrested. And then it's just like, you know, your brother did the right thing, you know, by saying that this was all his fault and he, you know, manipulated you and, you know, you're where you need to be and he's where he needs to be. And it, I don't know. I thought it was a really nice ending to the movie.
Yeah.
But no, I'm with you. I really like these kind of, it's almost like a snapshot into the life of somebody. Yeah. And it's just like it's just a really...
such an intimate scope for a story, which is, I think these days I'm generally just so exhausted from the red notices and the, you know what I mean? Like the globe trotting, which going into our next movie, it worked a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was smaller scope than it seemed like it was going to be. And these types of movies also are an interesting breed.
They are.
The Wolf of Wall Street kind
of... Pain and
Gain. Yeah, kind of pseudo-biography comedies.
Yeah, it's definitely... I think this was kind of in the era of where every studio was trying to push out, like, can you believe this shit really happened in real life type story? And then it's like a super dark comedy that, you know, you find yourself laughing at shit and you're like, oh shit, that kind of actually happened. And, you know, you feel bad a little bit after the fact of like, I probably shouldn't have laughed at that. But like the way it was presented and the events that fell to where it was.
Just the fact that this things like this can just happen exist in this world. Yeah. But anyway, so Saturday was War Dogs. Loosely based on the true story of two young men, David Packaus and Ephraim Divaroli, who win a $300 million contract from the Pentagon to arm America's allies in Afghanistan. I chose to not read the incredibly long one because I think this is an enjoyable movie to watch. Just watch it. It's another one of those that ruins a whole movie if you read it. But
yeah, I'm surprised it took both of us this long to watch this movie.
I agree.
It's
been on my list. It's another one of those that's been around a long time that I...
So my first thought after watching this was I was just interested to know how much of this movie was realistic and how much was fabricated for the purpose of a movie.
Yeah.
Kind of seems like a, you know, a little bit of a theme this week of, you know, what's real, what's not. at least with some of the other movies we've talked about or referenced this week, you know. But no, this was a good movie. And I think it was one of my favorite Jonah Hill roles for sure.
I agree. I agree. I think it was one of my favorite Miles Teller roles too, probably second to Whiplash, because he's another one that it's a good week to talk about this because I would put him in the same realm as Richard Madden.
Okay.
I think that he is generally pretty bland and doesn't bring a whole lot. I've never been like, oh yeah, I like Miles Teller. You know, it's just kind of like, he was there. That's cool. Whatever. Except for Whiplash. I did really enjoy Whiplash.
I think it's a great movie. Interesting that like the two roles that you really like him in are more of his dramatic, serious roles where I feel like he's almost a comedic relief in a lot of his other roles.
Yeah.
So when he has the chance to really just kind of, you know, play that character well and not, I'm not even say typecasted as that person, but I think he has just a wit and a humor to him that has, you know, done well for him in his other movies. But this was,
to contrast that, I didn't like Van Vorstick and that wasn't exactly a comedy relief role for him.
No, but maybe for everyone also wasn't who watched a very good movie.
Anyway,
what'd you call it? Fan four stick.
Yeah, fantastic four. That's how the title is.
How does fucking Jonah Hill laugh? I'll
cut it in. Jonah Hill's fucking laughing this movie. Oh my God.
I'm really glad we watched it this year because AEY can start bidding on government projects starting this year.
That's literally what I said that came up at the end of the movie on screen. It's like 2022 AEY will be able to bid again for government contracts. And I looked at Jess and I was like, what a year to watch this, huh? Yes.
Hell yeah.
It really makes you think, oh, Jesus. You never know with these based on true events movies, but like you said, what's true and what's not. But gosh almighty, are they entertaining to watch.
Yeah, what a story and what a chain of events. Just, you know, he started off as a simple massage therapist and just found himself, you know.
What a jump, right?
Faking massage documents therapy and
to Egyptian cotton sheet sales to gunrunner.
Yes. International arms dealer.
Talk about a promotion.
And quite the one at that. He's making some good money.
Yeah, shit. Well, I mean, when you're making $30 million off of the what they called crumbs.
Yes.
Of the government contracts arming the war in Iraq.
Yeah, this is, I think it's a movie. Again, I don't want to like recommend or not recommend things. I think it's weird to even call it a fun movie to watch, you know?
It is, though. It kind of is. Like, you're laughing the whole time, but it's also totally fucked up and a whole lot of shit's going on.
That's what I said. It falls into that dark comedy of just, like, you're kind of in disbelief that this shit, you know, even took place in these events, whether they were accurate or not, you know, loosely transpired. You're just like, holy shit, like, fuck.
Well, and the fact, if it was true that after all they did, what got them in the end was that
they screwed dickhead
Divaroli didn't pay the box guy, the packing guy.
$100,000 on a fucking $300 million contract.
Tiny little, yeah. That's what got him in the end. Holy shit.
And then they're like fucking slap on the wrist.
Yeah, he got
7 months of house arrest. 7 months and
Divaroli got
4 years.
Yeah. And AEY can bid again soon.
Yeah, in 2022.
Yeah, it's like, you did so much illegal shit, but, you know, we'll just...
We just don't want people to know that. It's all about
that shmoney, man.
We were a part of it, too.
Dude, I've been saying that so much since Zola. I need to stop. Just make that shmoney.
Making that shmoney. But no, it was a pretty good overall film. And only those involved will really know what actually transpired and what was made up for the movie.
But all we know for sure is that AEY doesn't stand for anything.
No.
Like IBM.
Yeah. Fucking get out of the office.
This was a good movie.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it.
So was our Sunday movie.
Colossal. Gloria is an out-of-work girl who, after getting kicked out of her apartment by her boyfriend, is forced to leave her life in New York and move back to her hometown. When news reports surface that a giant creature is destroying Seoul, South Korea, Gloria gradually comes to the realization that she is somehow connected to this far-off phenomenon. As events begin to spin out of control, Gloria must determine why her seemingly insignificant existence has such a colossal effect on the fate of the world. Yeah, this was not what I was expecting at all.
All I have to say is, did not see that coming.
Yeah.
This has to be one of the most unconventional movies or stories. You see where it's going and you're okay with that, mm-hmm. but it's nothing new. And then they're like, psych, no, the guy you thought was the good guy the whole time is actually the fucking villain.
Yeah, he's just a fucking narcissist. Jason who hates Sudeikis himself and everybody else and
was so good.
Yes, he's such a
him too. The I think his lately, I kind of got bored of him after, what was the one with the RV where they go?
Oh.
With Jan Aniston and, these are not the drugs you're looking for. That's the only quote I remember in the movie. He has a pretty wide range too,
We're
I think.
The Millers.
We're the Millers, yeah. Because I think he was also kind of just typecast as the like comedy guy, but he's really good in dramatic roles. Mm-hmm. I think I like him better in dramatic roles with humor thrown in. Like he's good, kind of like Miles Teller, I think, where a dark comedy role for them, I like. I think they get miscast as just
comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a fucking psychopath in this movie. And his ability to just manipulate people around him and really become this like terrifying presence while just like fucking sitting, drinking a beer. Yeah. And you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This
like how controlling he was able to get.
And he knows exactly
the
like
fucking fireworks
in the bar.
Dude, that's so fucked up. I just did the most irresponsible thing in this bar and she's still not going to leave with you. That the fucking mind fuck behind that is just astounding.
Yeah, and then at like, you know, one point he's just like fucking taking punches and then, you know, he's just like, okay. And he's just chill and then he'll lash out and then he's fucking all calm and he's apologetic and he just knows how to get under everybody's skins and he knows what like really fucking irks everybody. And at the end of everything, it's just because like he's just fucking unhappy with the world and himself and he's just, so if you don't know, essentially Anne Hathaway can control this giant skyscraper of a Godzilla looking thing.
Yeah. Big monster. When that she's appears in at 8:05 AM in a park.
Yeah. She's in a park and the monster will appear in Seoul and her actions will control what the monster does.
And then, only her and Jason Sudeikis' character can summon these monsters
and his when is they're a in giant this park. Robot.
Yeah, and you find out at the end of the movie that it has to do with when they were kids, they were friends as kids. She moved to the city and she was successful from this small town and then she ends up moving back to the small town. They meet up again, you know, out of chance and kind of hit it off and it seems like it's this, you know, it's going to be this. They're going to fall in love. She's going to ditch her shitty boyfriend from the city. And then boom, it's like, nope, actually he's a controlling psychopath.
Yeah. And
and they both fight as giant monsters in Seoul. And they're like getting drunk. They're both drunks and they get drunk and they end up killing people in Seoul because they fall down as the monsters. And I don't know, man, this, yeah, this just did not go how I thought it was. And I loved every bit of it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the weirdness of this film. I was super caught off guard like you were with, like, because you just had this preconception as to where the movie was headed, and then all of a sudden it wasn't that at all. It's just like, it just kept having all like these twists and turns, and you're just like, what the fuck's going on? And it's such a hard movie to talk about because it's it was a weird thing to watch.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I really did.
Yeah, it was...
it was a good end of the week.
Yeah.
Wild
it was enjoyable.
End. Yeah, I wish I could say more about it. It was a good movie.
I haven't seen Anne Hathaway in something in a while either. And she was all right.
No Devil Wears Prada.
No, this was no Devil Wears Prada. But that wraps up the week. So do you have any final thoughts?
I always find it interesting how much more I remember when we start talking about things than like coming into the podcast and being like, God,
I still got nothing for the take, but
what did I watch?
But yeah, it's interesting talking about it where we do start to, I don't know, you just need to put yourself in that mindset of until we're talking about it, it's just kind of sitting somewhere, waiting.
And I'm glad that we've had a few guest speakers on to just kind of confirm like how hard it is to like just keep all of that information in a place for you to be able to revisit and talk about and do some, you know, analysis around what it is that you watched. And I'm almost like challenging other people who listen to the podcast to just watch 7 movies in a week with a friend and just try to have a conversation around it.
Yeah.
Cause it's difficult. And again, I had a really good week. It was a busy week, though, and I think that played into why maybe it just felt so long because, you know, again, it's not that the movies are hard to watch every day. You know, I get through it, and it's part of my daily schedule. It's just everything that comes after the fact of that, of what was the take again?
Yeah. Some just earn a better place in our minds than others.
And maybe it's just the whole concept of what we watch on Monday as we start a new week, because it seems to be a kind of a theme of our Monday films just aren't super memorable.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if we That's something I was looking at this week of how we kind of place our movies in the week, even unintentionally. And we've talked about this a little before, but if we look back on our Monday movies, they don't tend to be... I think we think, oh, we'll have more time on Saturday or Friday or something maybe. We put the bigger movies or the movies we're more interested in on those days just subconsciously. And so I'm curious to maybe take a week and turn it on its head and intentionally front load the week with good stuff at some point. Maybe we'll do that later. That'll be a theme.
Well, we have so many weeks to, you know, experiment with.
It's true.
That we could take all seven movies that we plan to watch, throw them into a number generator, spit them out, and then that's how we just watch them, just to see if it changes anything. It's just, there is no, because we try to have some method to our madness, right? Of, like you said, these movies we might be more inclined, like we know kind of what to expect from them, so we're going to put them on these days, or we know we're going to be busy this day, so we don't want to necessarily put this super dramatic, over the top.
We put The Man Who Killed Don Quixote on Saturday because it was 132 minutes, right? But like, I don't know, I do see, and like I said, I don't think we're doing this necessarily intentionally, but I do see quite a few weeks looking back at our spreadsheets that if you look at the run times on our tables here, they're kind of backloaded, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the longer movies tend to fall
on a weekend
at the end of the week.
I think it's more Saturday than Sunday, though, because Sunday films, we want to have something that's easier to talk about. Because
quickly.
Yeah, because we're watching it and recording in the same day. And
yeah.
So, no, we're learning a lot through this experience. It's interesting just to kind of see some of the trends that we're seeing how different types of movies affect us on certain days. And yeah, I never thought it would become as much as it was.
What do you mean?
I think we have both gone deeper into the thought analysis around everything than I ever thought we would. It just seems, you know, at the beginning it was, we're watching seven movies and we're going to see what happens, you know, and now we're seeing what happens. And I think it's interesting to see the toll it's taken on us. And
yeah, I never thought that I would get so burnt out this early. Well, I was like, man, we're going to make it halfway. It's going to be great. And then it's going to be tough. It's like, nah, dude, fucking week 17. I'm tired.
To be fair, we're 119 days and 119 movies in, so.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
It's okay to be burnt out.
I know. Just to think about that, because I don't, maybe you do, because you look at the run times and the, you know, how many movies. I tend to not look at those metrics just for my own sanity. But, but like, that's so weird to think about that we've watched 119 movies. Since October.
Yeah.
To think about, like, how many movies have we watched just normally on our own in past years?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure we probably have years where we probably watched 119 movies, period, the whole year.
I don't even know. What is that, one every 3 days? Like, that seems excessive.
You're right. Even that seems like, fuck, I don't know.
Let's see, 119 divided by 365. So yeah, that'd be one movie every 3.3 days, essentially. There's no way in any year I've lived that I've watched one movie every 3 days.
Well, and I don't, you know, it's weird too to think about how it breaks down that way, because there have been, you know, there have been weekends in the past where you're like, you know, this weekend, whatever, I'm burnt out after, you know, thinking back college finals and shit, whatever. You take like 3 or 4 days and you just binge everything that you've been wanting to watch for a while because you haven't. So I'm sure some of it evens out in some places.
And I'm sure as a kid, like, there was movies that I just love so much that I would probably watch them every day for like 3 months straight,
sure,
you know? Because I
put this on.
I love The Incredibles.
But also, you're a kid. You're like, you're not watching it.
No, really, you're doing other things.
You
while
do other
doing
stuff.
It.
And that's the other thing, too, that we've talked about so much. But, you know, even if we had years where, even if you think, okay, we watched what averaged out to be a movie every 3.5 days or so, did we really watch those movies? You know, was it like, yeah, we probably have had years where we've watched plenty of movies, but it's like, I put it on and then I fucking got on my computer.
It's background
and
noise.
It's just there, yeah. Right? And occasionally I'll look up and tune in.
Yeah, and
plus
not,
considering repeats.
As I say, it's not movies new movies. You've already seen. Exactly. Yeah, it's things that you know what to expect and you can follow along with the story while not watching the movie.
Yeah, that's even more. 119 unique movies. Not just like we watched a movie 119 times.
Yeah.
Since October. It's we've watched 119 different movies.
Movies since October. Woo. Well, that's too much for me this week.
Yeah, I'm going to go take a nap. Enjoy your week.
Go take a cold shower before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, have a shot of Schwisky. Put some pants on for once in my miserable life.
No. either way, we appreciate you tuning in. Check us out on the socials that we don't post to as we should. And
we keep having ideas, but we just...
We like the podcasting. We don't like the other stuff that comes
with
it.
Yeah. If you stumble upon us and like us, that's what, you know, that's what we're here for. We're here to do this for ourselves.
But, have a wonderful day, everybody.
Okay. Sayonara.
That was last week. 2 weeks ago.
I was saying goodbye. Adios. Farewell. So long.
Buongiorno.
So long. Farewell to you, my friends. Goodbye.
Okay, bye.
For now, until we meet again. I said so. What was that, Bear in the Big Blue House?
Oh my gosh, I haven't seen that ever. Either way, these headphones are killing. So, adios. Okay, bye. Okay, bye.